Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. So today we have Glenn Block, who is, among other things, the program manager for the WCF web APIs, which I want to ask him about. He is also one of the people primarily responsible for meth and was personally responsible for breaking my head and turning my brains inside out around that. And he is also one of the kinder and nicer people that I have met at Microsoft, which is saying a lot. Glenn.
That is so sweet, Jesse. I'm going to cry now. Thank you very much. You know, speaking of which, what the heck happened to HVP?
You know, oh, we're going to start there, are we?
I was just talking with John Galloway about that. And like, man, there was this great project with all this excitement with the community. And what happened to it?
Well, the project is great. And it went extremely well. And we got right up to the point where it was obvious how we could plug it into the Silverlight media framework. And so I felt it was a huge success. I didn't see any need to continue banging on that until there was some felt need for that technology. I'm a real big believer in need demands and technology follows, not here's cool technology, now let's find a need for it. So, you know, we learned a great deal and we moved on to the next thing. And I'm pretty happy about how the HVP thing went and how we figured out using MEF to integrate it into the player. So now if there comes a need for it, we'll do that. Otherwise, John and I are on to building the full stack. Did he tell you about that?
No, he did not. But how do you like the way I did that Jedi mind trick and I turned this into a me interviewing you?
Well, that, you know, that's what this is for. It doesn't have to be an interview. It could be a discussion. And my question is, I got to go back and play the tape and see if I sound defensive. Because it was like, hi, Glenn. Yeah, what happened to that thing you were working on?
Nice. Well, no, I just was very impressed with, you know, the outreach on that project. And as you know, a huge fan of doing things, working with the community. So I thought you were breaking some new ground there as far as the, you know, the lean approach and the posting all the work items and stuff on CodePlex. And I just thought it was great. Anyway, moving back to me, that was a diversionary technique, by the way. I just hit my 5-year anniversary, so I'm putting some of these, you know, drinking too much Kool-Aid tactics into play now.
Excellent.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the call. I left the MEF team around last May, and I've been in the WCF team since then, working on something that we've been calling the web APIs. So you ask the question, like, what is that and why are we doing it? Well, so back in .NET 3.5, we had a lot of customers coming to us and saying, hey, you know, I've been building these SOAP services, but this RESTful thing is looking really interesting. And, you know, HTTP has a lot of power directly. Why do I, you know, I'd like to be able to talk more nicely over HTTP. And one of the reasons that's important is because I might be on a device that has no SOAP stack, right? But I want to reach that customer. They've got a mobile phone that has just a crappy browser on it. But I'd love to be able to surface my capabilities for my applications to those customers. You know, this is not so much about offering them a site, but offering them functionality. And so, and I also service these other clients. So it's not just about browsers. I talk to devices. I talk to lots of different things. And so we introduced this thing called WCF HTTP in 3.5, where we basically said, hey, you can configure your services in such a way that will make them more friendly over HTTP. I use friendly in quotes because I think it allowed you to do some limited things. I mean, one of the nice things it did was give you the ability to have a URI and to map cleanly against a URI and start to pull some things out of the URI that might be important to you. Because in the SOAP world, URIs are just completely opaque. Now, interestingly, from a REST perspective, URIs are also opaque. But from the client perspective of creating URIs and those URIs maybe having some meaning to the server, that opacity isn't necessarily there. Servers very much look at things like URI segments and say, oh, you went to, you know, as an example, using the MVC, using the new MVC music store. If I was exposing that in a RESTful way, I might have something like album/genre/jazz. As an example, which the current site doesn't support, but you could do that. And in that case, my server is really interested in what that URI is, not just as an opaque thing from a matching perspective, but actually looking at pieces of that URI and saying, ooh, you specified genre. That means you're going to some genre resource, and this is the one that you want. So we offer the ability in WCF HTTP to surface that into your code in a nicer way.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you for 1 second. I followed what you said about being able to parse and have visibility into the URI, but but a couple times you use the term in a restful way, and that's a term that gets kicked around quite a lot, and I wonder if you have a good short summary of what you mean by that.
Sure. So first thing I'll tell you is REST doesn't mean what you think it means. And the reason I'm saying that may sound arrogant, but 95% of the people that use the word REST use it in the context of it's not soap, right? It's a nice way to just expose things over the web with pretty URIs. So REST doesn't care about the URI at all. And what REST is an architectural style, taking it verbatim from Roy Fielding, the guy who coined this, that represents how the web infrastructure was built to use HTTP, meaning it's a way to use HTTP that is optimized for the way a lot of the web servers and proxy servers and other things on the web use HTTP. It is a set of constraints that if you adhere to those constraints, the promise is things like evolvability, scalability, simplicity, which sound like motherhood and apple pie words, but they're actually what make the web work. So I would argue REST is what makes the web work. The reason why a lot of people don't understand it is because when you're in just the idea of web pages being served by the infrastructure of the web, a lot of us don't know how proxy servers work. We don't care. The power of REST is the fact that a lot of it is completely behind the scenes today. As we start to think of more deliberately exposing things other than web pages over the web, a lot of these principles and concepts start to be things we have to actually think about because it's not just naturally getting taken care of for us. Let me tell you what I mean. One of the principles of REST is around using the uniform interface. HTTP offers an interface of things like get, post, put, delete, as far as HTTP methods, and it offers a set of headers, control headers, like accept headers that are used for representations. So there's a set of rules of how I should use those, and REST is about building systems that apply to those rules, but you could violate those rules. Let me give you an example of what I mean, and this is a pretty famous example. Get, as a method, the HTTP spec defines that get should be idempotent and safe. Now, what does that mean? Safe means that if I call this get, if I do a get request, it won't cause the resource state to change. It doesn't mean nothing will change, meaning I might have a service on the other end that has a counter for number of requests. But it means that from my perspective as the caller, I'm not causing any kind of change. I know that I can call that same get over and over again, and it's not causing any modification to the system that I have incurred. Again, the system might decide to do something. And then idempotent means that if I call one get or I call 500 gets, it's the same net result because there's no side effects. I can call it over and over again. Now, there are other HTTP methods like put, which is not safe because it means I am doing like a change. I'm changing the state of the resource, but it is safe, meaning if I do a update to a resource.
Hang on. You said it's not safe, but it is safe. So
sorry, it is not safe, but it is idempotent.
Yes.
So I can issue multiple put requests to the same resource for the same value, and it will be like I issued one. That's the difference. So where does that get you into trouble? And Steve Main has a great article on this, is that a lot of people use get in a way that is not idempotent or safe. So they use a form on a HTML page and they do a get, but that form, instead of being like a search form that is just saying, here's a query I want to issue, it actually does an update. I edit some fields and I do a get. Well, the proxy servers of the web and the infrastructure expects that if you do a get, that is cacheable because of the fact that it's supposed to be idempotent and safe. But by it not being idempotent or safe, that means those caching servers don't really know how to, you know, they may think they're dealing with it correctly, but they're not, which can get you into trouble. But it also is a problem because now you're actually causing state changes, so the caching servers just can't help you, right? There's no, because you're changing state, the idea of the caching server is to say, I've gone and asked for foo, and it says, oh, I've got a version of foo, I can give it to you. But as soon as you bring in the idea that I'm changing state, if that caching server returns to you the representation it had before, it's actually going to be wrong.
Right, but that is going to be wrong because you've used it in a non-idempotent way, and so
and a non-safe way.
And the theory to take this back full circle of rest is to use all of these in the way that they are prescribed.
Designed to be used.
Right, even though it's possible to use them in other ways.
As I'm just giving an example. Now, here's the place where this really gets you into trouble. So when the Google web crawler first came out, and this is well known, it was walking every link that it saw and assuming that link is a get, right? So what a lot of blogging services did, though, is they would expose so that if I want to delete a blog entry, that was actually a URI where the name would be something like myblog/post/5/delete. So they were using the resource and a get on that resource to actually cause a change.
Okay, let's try that. How does it sound to you?
That sounds better. So where we were at is we were talking about how these web crawlers were just walking links and following them, right? That's what they do.
Yes.
And because of the fact that all these blog engines had links posted that if you did a get on them, they actually caused a delete. The famous thing that happened is when the web crawler went live, a whole bunch of people, all their blog posts got deleted.
Ouch.
So that's just an extreme example of when, you know, and they were going off the concept of, hey, we're building the web crawler. It's working with the HTTP protocol. And the spec says that get should always be idempotent and safe. Well, surprise, surprise, when everybody's blogs went away. So I think that the problem is that there's a lot of people that think about REST as the it's nice over HTTP and it's friendly URIs, but have no problem with the fact that, you know, that URI, I have a URI for delete, when in actuality, that delete URI that's accessible over a get completely violates what REST is about. But why people really care about REST, the people that say that use it in the way that Roy intended it, is they want to build systems that evolve naturally and that behave really well with the infrastructure of the web. Because think about it from a scaling perspective. If I obey those rules, that means if a million people try to hit my website, there's lots of other servers that are going to opt in to help me as long as the rules are being followed. And that's powerful, that I can leverage the infrastructure of the web to help me. I'm a small guy, but I can leverage that as long as I do a few things. And if I don't, well, that's just an opportunity that's lost.
And does the WCF web API set help me to develop in a way that is going to allow me to leverage that?
So I think we started down that path, as I mentioned, in 3.5. We continue to improve that in 4. In the work we're doing now, you can say, so the thing that's different, so I would say yes and no. I would say yes, it helps you to a point in that it surfaces the ability to do these things, but the way it surfaces it is not ideal. And the reason for that is not a surprise. It's that when we built WCF, we built it with this idea of transport agnosticism. And we thought about things like HTTP and TCP as really just transports. In that model, that is all about the transport, the thing that's most important is the body of this message, right? I'm sending a contact. I'm sending a this. I'm sending a that. But the reality of it is when you start to talk about like REST and HTTP, the really interesting things are outside of the body. They're in the headers, right? In the control headers. And so because we built a model that was optimized for the other, we made it possible to do it in WCF HTTP, but it wasn't the best model. So in 4.0, we continued to improve that, but it was still very much still that same old model, which, not, you know, that model's not bad. It's just that that model has a specific goal in mind, which is it outweighs the idea of being able to talk over many things from a protocol perspective, over being able to richly take advantage of one specific protocol, which happens to be more than a transport protocol, but an application layer protocol, and that thing is called HTTP. The work we are doing now is saying, okay, we've heard all this feedback. We've seen lots of frameworks popping up in Ruby, like Ruby on Rails has a lot more control over HTTP. We've seen frameworks popping up in the open source community like Service Stack and OpenRasta, and that have this much purer model towards HTTP or RESTfully. And we're saying we need to be able to have a model that is really tailored towards HTTP, and that you don't use this model because you want to achieve the other things. You don't say, I'm building a service that I want to talk over every medium known to man, because there's a trade-off there, right? So instead you say, give me a model that is 100% tailored to the things that matter to me over HTTP from top to bottom. And that is going to allow me to be much more successful at taking advantage of those things that HTTP has to offer. That's what we're building.
Okay, that sounds amazing and fascinating and a little abstract still for me. So can we be concrete about what kinds of things you might build?
Absolutely. So one of the things that HTTP defines is this concept of a media type. The response, the body that you send or receive in an HTTP message can be anything. It doesn't have to just be a serialized object. It could be a document. It could be a PDF. It could be an image. Traditionally, in WCF, we led you down a path of just XML, and then with HTTP, we came out and said, hey, you can do XML or JSON. But HTTP says you should be able to pass anything. So if you go, for example, if you watch the MVC talk that I just gave yesterday on MVC Conf, I show an example of returning an image from a resource. So because of the fact that I've passed an accept header of image slash PNG, I've said, don't give me some serialized representation. I actually want to see an image. Like if I go to a contact and I send you image slash PNG, I want a real contact photo to come back. And the system can tell me I can do that or I can't do that. So that's an example. And you may say, well, why would I want to do that? Well, think about a range of clients consuming this that have different capabilities and needs. Another example would be like an Atom feed. I'm using an Atom feed reader. So I don't want you to just give me XML or JSON. I actually want you to be able to give me Atom. But if I'm coming to you from a jQuery browser app, I want you to give me JSON. Today, that's accomplished like the way the traditional web developer would build that, like if they were using MVC, is they would have different views and potentially different URIs even, like go to a URI called slash JSON, et cetera. But the HTTP fabric has this notion of headers. So what we're allowing you to do is say you can have a resource that has as many representations as you want, including your own custom ones. And I'll talk about why the custom ones are interesting. And that just works. And it's a separation of concerns in the sense that I don't have to change my service. So for my service today, let's say my service today doesn't support Atom. And we start getting customers saying, ooh, we want to start using Atom feed readers. Or we want to support OData. We want to use PowerPivot. I can now, in the newer stack, just say, I'm going to write a formatter that handles OData and easily plug that in. Yet it still offers up JSON for my jQuery app, or maybe even a plain old HTML representation if I'm coming from a downgraded browser.